You left this world, but not my heart. A quote by Sally Painter. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another True Crime episode with your hosts, Barb and Shay. How are you doing, Barb?
I'm doing good.
I see you had a lot of fun this weekend.
Yes. We always have fun on the weekends. But, yeah, we did. We did a lot of things. Went to Comic Palooza in Houston with the family and then went to an engagement for a family member, and they said yes. So that was pretty
Yay.
Fun. And Sunday we just pretty much relaxed and cleaned and hung out. How are you? How was your weekend?
I'm good. I went over to our Meemaw's house and hung out with her for Saturday and Sunday. And on Friday, Jonathan and I had our normal like date night until we just watched a movie at home and then did a lot of schoolwork. That's basically my life right now is schoolwork. But yeah, so that's pretty much everything on that. Just a reminder for you all, Barb and I are releasing episodes on Wednesdays only right now. So just kind of giving you a reminder. We are also working on merch. We ordered some and we actually received it today, which we freaking love it. It's so cute. Of course, Barb, you have it. How do you feel?
Oh, I'm totally excited. I'm ready for us to get it out to you guys and let you guys take a look, see what you like, get feedback, order some stuff if you want to order some stuff. But I personally love our new merch. It's probably my favorite that we have ordered so far.
Nice. I'm super excited to see it in person. Maybe I'll be able to see it this weekend. Who knows? So yeah, we haven't forgotten about merch. We promise we're going to get it to y'all. We're working on it. But that's pretty much all of the updates that we have. Let's jump into today's episode, shall we?
Yes, I am ready.
It's kind of a long one. It's not too long, but we'll see how it goes. I got my information from murderpedia.org, chronicle.com, deadlywomen.fandom.com, cbsnews.com, and oxygen.com. So I got most of it from Murderpedia, though, because they have all the links there. But yeah, this case is kind of crazy. I had to literally like double check with you that I haven't covered it because for some reason I know every single thing about this case and I have no idea why. I was like, I swear we covered this, but I looked in all of our notes and everything. I could not figure it out. Maybe I just heard it from another one. It's just one that stuck with me or something. I don't know, but this one's an interesting one. So yeah. Today, we will be going over the case of Piper Rowntree and Frederick. And if I say that wrong, it's either Frederick or Fredericks. And this is Piper Rowntree, who was convicted of murdering her ex-husband, Frederick Jablin, who was 52 at the time of his death. To this day, she still claims that she was not the one who murdered her ex-husband. And in fact, she at one point said it was her sister. I don't know if that's still the case, but as we go through today's episode, I want y'all to really pay attention, especially you, Barb, because at the end, I want to know what you think and if you actually think that she's guilty or if you think someone else could have done it. And we'll kind of talk about that at the end. But okay, Let's start this episode by talking a little bit about Piper and Frederick's life. Piper grew up in a happy home, according to the Rachel Bell crimelibrary.com. She was raised on a small farm in Harlington, Texas. She was one of five siblings, and her father was actually a surgeon in the military. I think it was the army, and her mom was a stay-at-home mom. All of her school life, she did really well. She made good grades. She went to school. She never missed. She wasn't the most popular, but she had close friends that she stayed friends with throughout a long time, which is all that matters, right? Is those ones that stick with you. But she excelled in academics and applied to the University of Texas and was accepted. And that's University of Texas in Austin. She quickly signed up for classes, not knowing that she would meet the man she would marry and grow a life with. In 1981, she would meet the man she wanted to be with forever. They were both attending University of Texas, but not in the same way. So Frederick was actually a professor, and Piper was taking his communications class when they met. I didn't find like the age difference. I don't know how big of an age difference it is, but it's interesting to see a professor and student situation.
Okay.
But then also 1981.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the first, right?
So. Yeah, right. So he wanted to start fresh. Oh, sorry, I skipped forward. Around the time that they met, Frederick was actually going through a divorce already. So he's already old enough to be going through a divorce while she's just now getting into college. I don't know what year she was in, but he wanted a fresh start. And when he met Piper, he knew that that was his new beginning. That was where he wanted to start. Not long after they met, the two would share their vows and promise till death do us part in 1983. In the same year, they moved to San Antonio, Texas, so that Piper could go to law school. I actually think that she went to law school, like they moved to San Antonio first, and then they got married like that same year, a little down the line. But she wanted to go to law school because she was accepted to the graduate program to be a lawyer, which is great in 1983. You go, girl. But at the end, we probably don't care about her. But if... Sorry, y'all. You're probably thinking, well, that means that Frederick quit his job. Not so much. He actually would travel to and from the University of Texas in San Antonio. And some places it said that he would do this on the days that he worked, or that he still lived in Austin and he would travel to San Antonio to see her on the weekends or whatever. Whichever one, this was a far freaking drive. He would travel either every day or on the weekends to University of Texas because he just was not willing to give up his job yet. He felt that he was starting to get the rhythm there. And I mean, I drive an hour in total every day to and from work, and that is already stressful enough. I feel like I'm like, oh my God, okay, I gotta get up at four and do this and do that and blah, 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 which I don't ever get up at four. I try though. But I could not imagine driving over 2.5 hours every day, even if it was only 3 times a week or on the weekends or whatever it was. 3 times a week, if he was driving from San Antonio to Austin, would be 6 to 8 hours of driving a week. Imagine driving that far.
I mean, but for me, it's going to be a pass. Like, I'm not going to drive that. It's a no for me, but you have people like him who are willing to do the commute. And so I guess, especially with gas prices nowadays, I'm like, oh no, it's not happening.
Yeah, I guess back then they didn't have FaceTime, but I've been like, that's a quick FaceTime call, sorry. Mm-hmm. But my point is I would not be surprised that if this caused some stress on their relationship and their marriage, because, you know, on top of him driving, whether it's on the weekends or whatever, Piper was in law school, so she was constantly in class. You know how law school is in graduate program. You know, you're constantly doing schoolwork, and he's constantly working. And later on that year, Frederick would find out that Piper was bulimic, which, according to the Mayo Clinic, it is, quote, a serious eating disorder marked by binging followed by methods to avoid weight gain, end quote. So kind of like anorexia, but a little bit different. So the marriage kind of started crumbling early on. She had some depressive episodes, and she, you know, she was going to counseling for things that happened when she was growing up, and, you know, on top of doing school and him being gone, it just was all a lot. So that would not stop the two of them from staying together and having children. Piper would graduate in 1986 and move back to Austin. She would start her first job and would quit soon after. And this kind of started a ripple effect in her career. She would quit or lose her job and would have different reasons why. And, you know, she couldn't stick. So after a struggle of finding a good fit for Piper, she would end up opening her own, I believe it was a law firm, in 1993. But this wouldn't last either, because Frederick had actually gotten an offer at another school in Richmond, Virginia. Although this was a hard decision for Piper to up and leave her family, because all of her mom, her siblings, and I think she was one of 5 siblings or whatever, she had to get up and leave her whole family. But she agreed because Frederick was actually going to be getting a pretty large pay raise, and this would help the family live comfortably, especially because at some point it mentioned that that Piper had a spending problem. So she loved spending her money. She loved buying things. And especially if they're going to have kids, you know, if he's going to get a pay raise, it's probably something that they couldn't pass up. And it was a salary job too. So it was constant income. Well, the family packed up and moved to Virginia to start their new life. When they moved, Piper decided she wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, and the two would end up having three children a few, like, I think they had two when they lived in Texas, and then they had another one down the line. But she was not fulfilled with three little ones and all of their activities. You know, they did all the sports and whatever it may be. At some point around 2000, or, yeah, that's so weird to say 2000. Just
the
done.
Year 2000.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. It was said that Piper had a depressive episode after having an ectopic pregnancy, and then they actually had to give her hysterectomy. And if some of you don't know, that means that she basically got her reproductive organs removed and she could no longer have children. And if three children wasn't fulfilling enough for her, this could have caused a big trigger, right? So, yeah, this led Piper to actually have an affair with another married man who was her ophthalmologist. Can't say that word with a retainer in. But things started to go down here. I can't say some of these words, y'all. So things started to go downhill, and this led to Piper and Frederick to get a divorce, which was Frederick found out after, I think, the doctor's wife was threatening Piper, saying all this stuff. He found out and then said, nope, not doing this. Our marriage is already enough struggle. I'm not doing this anymore. So he filed for divorce, and once it hit the trial, it took about 8 months for the divorce battle to end in 2002, where Frederick would gain sole custody of the kids, and Piper had to pay $890 in child support every month, which is rare, y'all. Like, even if the wife was in the wrong in the divorce, usually the wife always gets the kids. And this is a interesting situation, but I think it had to do with her not being able to financially support the kids and probably mentally supporting them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So not long after the ruling, Piper would move back to Houston, and the two would live their separate lives. Piper's life didn't get any better as time went on. She would file for bankruptcy and she would end up with more than $10,000 in back child support payments. That's a lot of freaking money if you're only doing $890 a month. That's like way, way, way backed up. So as for Frederick, he made it work. He made the changes to things that he needed to get done, and he made his new routine with his children, and he made it work. And that worked for him. Everything seemed to be going fine on his end. Piper was struggling a little bit. I believe she was living with her sister at the time. You know, life was just not going good for her. But now you know a little bit of the background on the couple. Let's talk about what happened on October 30th, 2004. This was a Saturday, and it was early morning. Birds were singing and just waking up, and it was chilly outside, you know, October spooky vibes, y'all. This is the day before Halloween, our favorite holiday. Mm-hmm. So the newspaper was just delivered to the Jablin household. Frederick would make his way outside while the kids were sound asleep inside. Well, around 6:39 a.m., a neighbor had made a call to 911 saying that he was woken up by three gunshots, and when he looked out of his bedroom window, he saw someone running down the street, which is super odd to him. So the police showed up, of course, and they came to the neighbor's home. He made it clear that he was not sure if the person was the actual suspect or if it was just like a man or woman. It could have been a jogger. Like, you know, mind you, it's still dark at the time. But the officers look around, they left after they came up with nothing. So, which I can get, because if he lives in a probably middle class, upper class neighborhood. A lot of people run, they feel comfortable running around, nothing happens, you know, gunshots are not normal. So he did the right thing. Well, about 30 minutes later, the sun would rise and there would be enough light to show just what happened. 30 minutes later, the neighbor would go to look around just to make sure, you know, he's like, I know what I heard. I know what that was. There's no way. And as he looked, he would find that Frederick was laying in his own blood, lifeless on the concrete in his driveway. But to me, I'm like, okay, so I get it was dark and all, but how much did the police actually look?
I mean, if the guy was laying right around the corner when the neighbor walked out there, clearly they didn't look very good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know how he spotted him, if it was from like his upstairs bedroom and maybe he was like right behind a fence or something. Whatever it was, if it was 30 minutes later and it was already bright outside, they just took it as you probably heard it. It's not the right thing, which kind of ticks me off because you never know, he could have been saved, right? And when I tell you where he was shot at, it's like, he probably could have been saved. But the neighbor would call 911 again, and when they showed up, they would find that he was shot twice. One of the shots was in his back, and the other was in his arm. So to me, I feel like, yeah, the arm, the back, it depends on where it was. But like, I feel like if they were to look for him, it could have been possible. But police were at a loss on who would do this. But after investigating, they would come up with who did it and how. Now, this is the part that people are a little iffy about, and the timeline is kind of different, and you know, they have all these theories or whatever, but this is where I really want you to listen that we're going to talk about. So apparently the police would look at, so obviously they look into Frederick's past and they see, okay, well, he has a wife who's, they did just divorced. They had this animosity. They had this troubling divorce and all these problems in Piper's life, whatever it is. So they start investigating her automatically. She was the first person they looked at, nobody else. So they would look at her phone records and see that she was actually in Richmond, Virginia the day that he was murdered. Mind you, she lived in Houston at this point. So she had to get on a plane, fly over, and be there, right? And I think at some point she says, oh, well, I was there because it was my weekend to see the kids or whatever it may be. But it's still just weird, coinky-dink, right? So, actually, matter of fact, she would say that she wasn't there at all. And then she would say, oh, I was there to see my kids. It's a whole thing. But her phone showed that she went from Houston, Texas to Richmond, Virginia on October 28th, which was the Thursday before the murder. Then it showed that she was in Richmond until October 30th when the signal would return back to Houston. That was the first thing that the police found. And then they also found that she had a debit card that she was using. It was not her debit card, but it belonged to her then boyfriend. But she used it all the time because, mind you, she filed for bankruptcy. She's broke, right? And so she's using her boyfriend's card to buy everything. So the tracking of the debit card from purchases that she made tracked all the way from when she traveled from Houston to Virginia and from Virginia to Houston and while she was in Houston. So it basically followed everywhere that the cell phone signals were triggering. So whoever had the phone and whoever had the card were going, they were together, whoever it was. So not only that, but it would show that someone bought two wigs on October 21st, which was before she went to Richmond. But the wigs came back because they'll come back later, because I'm just kind of think about the wigs for a minute. So there's no way that she can drive, commit the murders, and get back to Houston so quickly, because I believe she was back in Houston the same day of the murder, right? So there's no way that she could have drove it. So they were like, okay, what's another way of transportation? Airplane. The police would search the footage, and they actually would also come in contact with an employee who remembered seeing a blonde woman who was kind of rushing her and seemed to really be worried to get her ticket quickly. She also remembered telling her, wow, that's a pretty name, Tina. She bought a round ticket to and from and also told the employee that she had to check a gun in. So, you know this employee is going to remember her, but just so y'all caught that, she said her name is Tina and not Piper. Well, Tina is Piper's sister's name. And so she used her ID. She was using, I mean, whether it be Tina or Piper, it was Tina's ID that was used. Which is crazy to me that an airport didn't catch that it was not a real, like, it wasn't the same person. So they checked in the gun. She passed all the inspections. The prosecutors are confident that it was actually Piper and have the records of the debit card that belonged to her boyfriend to buy the cable lock for the gun safe a few days before. But it also turns out that she had, that the gun had belonged to her sister Tina's boyfriend, and it was a .38 revolver, which is what killed her ex-husband. So this was enough evidence for the police to arrest Piper after finding her, and they felt they had a strong case against her. So just a reminder, there was Tina's ID being used. Tina was supposedly the person in the airport involved, because in the video, it showed that whoever was coming in had a different hair color than who was leaving. And it was said that whenever she came to shoot her husband, she was hiding either in the bushes or behind the van. And she was wearing a wig to kind of hide her. I don't know why people think wigs work, but they don't. Your face still looks the same, whatever. And so she came around that corner, shot him, and ran. So that's where the wigs come in. But they tried to say, oh, well, that's not the case. So this is where I'm going to tell you kind of how the defense argued against it, them saying it was Piper. So you got all of that, right? All good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So during the trial, the defense had some arguments against some of the evidence the prosecution had. One, the defense argued that Piper actually had more than one phone and that her sister Tina used the phone often. So if it was Tina, she could have possibly had Piper's phone. But to me, for someone who's filing under bankruptcy, it doesn't make sense that she has more than one phone. But I guess her boyfriend could have bought it, right? Second is that the argument against this was that, against the card, was that, against the wigs, was that she bought them to give to her sister because her sister would donate the wigs to cancer patients at the location she worked at, which I'm not going to say where she worked and all that, but I don't know. That kind of feels like, I don't believe you situation. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't just randomly buy two wigs and just give them to your sister.
Yeah. I'm going to wait till I put in my two cents until I hear all what the defense is telling, I guess, the prosecutors.
Okay, so the last thing is the defense stated that they had to do an ID check when checking in the gun, right? And when checking her in with her ticket and all that. Well, the ID that was given was Tina's, and in the picture, Tina had brown eyes. But if Piper was the one with the ID, she had blue eyes. And with someone checking a gun into a plane, usually they would catch something like that. And if they have two different color eyes, I'm sure they don't look like twins. So it was just that, like, a weird situation. So before I tell you the verdict that was against Piper, what do you think?
Just like based off the information that you've given me, I honestly think they both went. Like, I feel like they were both there. It would make sense why they were having each other's things, why there was two wigs bought, because they could have both been planning to go together on that plane, and why maybe they didn't catch that it didn't look like Tina, because that maybe that was Tina, and Piper was being checked in maybe 10 guests behind her or 10 guests in front of her. I feel like they were both there.
That's an interesting take. I think I saw that whenever I heard this case a long time ago, whatever it was. But that's interesting. It would be interesting to see like how they did that, if they both did it. But either way, right now, the thing that gets me is that, one, the police literally didn't look around the first time they were there. I don't know if it was a police or if it was security guard. Either way, they didn't look thoroughly, right, to find him. And then the second one is the fact that she could get through the TSA. The fact that she was able to get through TSA with an ID that had totally different colored eyes is kind of weird to me. Like, the odds of that actually happening is really weird, right?
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking that it was actually Tina. And Tina checked herself through. But then I feel like if they were both there, they should be able to go through who was on the plane and find a Piper and a Tina that both had tickets to be on that plane.
Yeah, and then, like, it's weird because her boyfriend was so willing to give Piper a gun. Like, what was that situation unless Tina was involved in it? You know, I feel like deeper things that go deeper, and I feel like even if they both weren't there, they're both at fault for it.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Huh. Well, thank you for saying that, because that actually, like, opened my mind up to think of it different ways, because I was thinking either or. But either way, the police only arrested one of them. On February 25th, 2005, they found Piper guilty for the first-degree murder of Frederick Jablin and was recommended a life in sentence. It didn't necessarily say that she was given. It just said recommended. And it is thought that she was hiding behind the bush or a car, like I said earlier, before confronting him and shooting him. Some say the motive was $200,000 in life insurance and that she wanted custody of her children. But no matter what, the three children lost their parents on October 30th. Nothing positive comes out of this case except for if Piper really did it, then she is where she belongs. So, which breaks my heart that those children, you know, it doesn't say anything about the children and where they went and how they're doing or anything like that. But usually I don't like giving children's names as much as possible. But yeah, that's basically it for today's episode. What do you think of today's case?
I think it was really interesting. And I feel like if there was a $200,000 life insurance that could have been given to her, like had he just passed away or was murdered by somebody else, that could also be a driving motive for her sister to get behind it with her, along with her sister being able to get her children back. I feel like $200,000, like if she went to her sister and said, hey, Tina, this is what I want to do. There's a $200,000 life insurance policy and I can get my kids back. If you help me in some way or somehow, I'm willing to give you $20,000. Will you do it? And then,
yeah.
I mean, people do it for $500.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen cases like that all the time. So why put that past her sister to be willing to help her along the way, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I totally agree. Once you said both of them, that's kind of got me thinking. I was like, well, shoot, that's a lot of money to split between people, right? So, but a lot of people don't understand that it takes a long time for life insurance to even be given to you. So the fact that they thought that if this was a case, the fact that they thought that at $200,000 they were just going to get free willy-nilly, no, that's not how it works. Right. But yeah, people, you know, will be people, I guess. But
I know,
yeah,
I enjoyed it. I think I heard about this, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, this case sounds murdered, so familiar.
Yes, like the way he was murdered and what happened with the police is so familiar. I just couldn't remember like what happened after, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I wonder if it was like, maybe it was on a documentary or like not unsolved cases, but maybe another series or something that we watch. It probably was on there, or even using like Criminal Minds or something. But thank you all for joining us today on today's episode, and please feel free to let us know what you think by emailing us at tcwtm2021@gmail.com, or find us on Facebook at Texas Chicks Who Talk Murder, on Instagram at Texas Chicks Who Talk Murder with no spaces, or on Twitter at Texas Chicks Who with a number one. If you don't want to share anything or be on social media or whatever it is, please take some time to give us a review on whichever platform you're listening to us on right now. And thank you all for sticking with us. Most importantly, stay out of dark places and watch your back, because you never know who's lurking. Bye.
Bye.